Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Have you ever felt like you've tried everything to heal from the pain of sexual abuse, and yet nothing seems to really be helping? Well, one of the reasons why most people struggle to break free from the pain of past child abuse is because the techniques out there are positioned as a one-size-fits-all answer. What I want you to know is that there are actually three distinct phases on the path to recovery, and I'd love to share with you about these phases, what issues you must resolve to move to the next phase, and what kinds of support you'll need in order to move forward as quickly and completely as possible. The road to recovery is much easier when you know what stage you're in and what to do next. So don't hesitate. Go to www.rachelgrantcoaching.com/checklist and get your 9-page guide today. Now, on to our show. Welcome to Beyond Surviving, the safe space for survivors of childhood sexual abuse to receive support, resources, and share their stories. Beyond Surviving is about freedom, healing, connection, and even laughter and fun. Most importantly, it's about letting go of the pain of abuse and finally moving on. I'm Rachel Grant, and for those of you who don't yet know me, I have been a sexual abuse recovery coach since 2007, and I'm also the author of Beyond Surviving, the Final Stage of Recovery from Sexual Abuse. I can work with you and support you around moving from that place of feeling broken and unfixable to a life that you truly love and enjoy. And you can learn more about me and the Beyond Surviving program at rachelgrantcoaching.com. Now, today I'm very excited to have here with me my guest, Jillian Short, who's going to be sharing with us all about the art of active healing. I can't wait to dig into this topic with her. She's such a powerful advocate and colleague of mine, and I want to tell you a little bit more about Jillian before I bring her on. She's an international spokesperson for Stop the Silence and also the founder of Always a Voice, a local and web-based support group committed to providing encouragement and awareness for adult survivors of child sexual abuse and other forms of trauma. She herself was subjected to sexual abuse from a young age until seven. And at the age of 12, when her parents went to Micronesia as missionaries, she loved it and began to learn language and embrace that culture and eventually became an interpreter for the mission church. And her abuse kind of fell into the background, became this kind of buried and unaddressed things until years later. And I'm going to let her tell a little bit more of her story here during our time together today. But mostly what I want you to know about her is that she has gone on to become a court-certified translator-interpreter, a co-owner of a real estate investment company, and the founder and CEO of Always a Voice. She is such a strong advocate. She also holds the title of Mrs. District of Columbia, U.S. Continental, and will be competing for the national title in August 2017. I didn't know about this. We're going to have to hear more about that. So Jillian has gone on to have a thriving marriage and family, more than she really could ever have imagined. She's a real testimonial to the journey that survivors can go on from, you know, when life it looks like it's bleak and not really going to work out, to healing and changing. And above all of that, she's also an author of three books. So there's plenty that she has to share with us, and we've got a lot to learn from her. So let's go ahead and get right to it. Jillian, welcome to the Beyond Surviving podcast.
Hi, Rachel.
Hello. So, you know, on your journey, Jillian, you have, you know, gone through many trials and tribulations, as all of us survivors of trauma do, and you've come to this place where you now think of healing as an art. And by way of sharing a little bit of your story with us, I'd love to hear more about that and how you came to think of healing as an art.
Yes, that's a really, really important question. I've just finished writing 3 of the 4 weeks this month of August on this very subject. It's a subject that's very close to my own heart. As Rachel has spoken already, I am a survivor as well of not only childhood sexual abuse, but a lot of times, I know if any of you have talked to other survivors, if you're a survivor yourself, we find out that there's a lot of similarities and there's a thread that kind of runs through survivors' lives. And what happens is we have abuse that happens in our childhood because we're not aware of what's going on and our parents don't know what's, maybe they're not even aware of it, maybe they're part of it, whatever. We go on to become adults with relationships. And as we all know, this affects who we choose, this affects how we live, and it affects how we parent. So I found myself years down the road in an abusive relationship and then find out that several of my, I have 10 children, and several of them were being sexually abused. Mm. Now, this is like double whammy. This is like quadruple, you know, tenfold whammy to in our lives. And but it's yeah. not as uncommon as we think. It's part of the package of life when we don't get proper help. It's kind of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So your question was, you know, how did I get onto the whole art of active healing? It's this process of, in my life, finding myself at the end of finding out the stuff about my children and the pain that it caused. It brought back pain from my past. And what ended up happening was several years of completely coming apart, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to a point that I realized, though, that there is life after this, and that if we want to be whole and healthy and well, it is possible for us to do so, just
right.
as if we found out we had diabetes or anything else. It is possible for us to find our new wellness and find that. And it's an art. I believe that there's a choice that we make to become as whole as we want to be.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And, you know, I think choice and reclaiming choice are so, so key for survivors of abuse. And coming to that place of, you know, thinking about your journey of healing as something that you're the author of, right?
Exactly.
That you almost like you're the painter, if you will, we'll take your analogy of art, right?
Yep,
you have the canvas in front
exactly
of you. That is
well.
Your life.
Yep.
And
that's
you
it.
Have the paintbrush. And you, yep, at a certain point, really do come to that place of going, okay, like, what do I want to create here? What do I want to paint? And yeah,
exactly,
there are things that we need to put in place to help us, you know, paint maybe a little more proficiently. You know, we get, you know, coaches or support to say, no, try using this color over here, right? Or here's how you make this look that way. And so what was it for you? Certainly, you know, this moment that you describe of, you know, understanding that your children have gone through trauma sounds like it was pretty pivotal in helping you recognize that, okay, it's time to make some choices here. It's time, to move in a new direction. Was there anything else that you could really pinpoint for yourself that helped you in first of all, recognizing that you had that choice available to you, and then really being able to fully step into that and take ownership in that way?
Yes, the pinpointing a specific moment I cannot do, because for mine it was a process for me, and something that's very important to my story, and it's possibly going to resonate with people that are listening, maybe to some degree or maybe very, very much. Mine was very wrapped up in religion, and this is not, my intention is not to pick apart validity as far as religion goes. What I am bringing up, though, is that when a child and then you grow up to become an adult and you're underneath some type of the religious order that says this is something you must do or else you are either condemned to hell or you are completely in the wrong. When someone lives under that, it brings a whole new set,
yeah,
of traumas and confusion, because it no longer is about what I want.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer about my feelings. And when you put the, I'm going to just say it, and I'm hoping and trusting that anyone listening will understand my true meaning deep down, reach way down and try to understand what I'm saying. When someone puts the God thing over someone's head, it brings a whole new set of indecisiveness, confusion,
yeah,
fear, trauma. And in my heart, I so wanted to do right. I'm a nice, kind, thoughtful, caring, very thorough person. So growing up knowing or thinking that I knew what God wanted from me really threw a monkey wrench into my whole life.
Mm, yeah.
So for me, my moment of understanding, oh my goodness, perhaps I've been a little wrong about all of this, was,
yeah,
not a moment where I said, okay, here we go. I see clearly now, and then, you know, the song comes on. I can see clearly now. It didn't happen for me.
No, shining light out of the heavens to say, now, Jillian, now.
That's right. In fact,
yeah,
in fact, the shining light was there for so long, saying, come on, honey, come on, honey, you can do this, you can do this. And it was so scary for me that it took a long process, and at this point, Rachel, looking back, I have to tell also the listeners that I had to go through several years of therapy and counseling just to get over the fact that it took me so long,
mm-hmm,
to get it, to understand, mm-hmm, and to actually do something and reach out for help.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I had to work through that. So for me, my process was, I had a large family. I didn't know how I was going to make these changes, and they were big changes. Didn't have a lot of support. In fact, I have very little outside support.
Mm-hmm.
So as I made these important changes, I found the strength to make the next one and the next one and the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where pretty soon I was running. You know,
mm-hmm,
it was no longer scary steps. It was, wow, you know, here I am, and it's a whole new life.
I love that. Yeah, you know, and something I want to highlight from what you just shared there, Jillian, is that step by step, you know, I kind of think of it like paint by numbers, right?
Yeah.
I think
right.
when we look at the whole picture of healing and like, oh, I've got to deal with this part over here and I've got to deal with that part over here and, man, how am I ever going to figure out this piece or let go of that thing? It can start to feel really overwhelming.
Yes,
but
exactly.
If we can find that place of going, you know what, okay, what's, you know, color number one, if you will, right? Or step number one, what's the next thing that I need to do? And try to break it down and try to keep it small and simple, you know, then we can tackle, you know, what seems like sometimes an insurmountable, you know, journey, really, or process.
Yes. And it's twofold. We have to have this long-term vision. You know, if we take it back to the whole painting and you kind of stole that completely from me, and that's perfect, because the whole healing as an art, if we look at it, like you said, similar to a painting or similar to, you know, we've all been to perhaps little camp or workshop things where they'll hand you a pile of stuff and say, okay, make something out of this, and you're supposed to end up with this certain, maybe this model that they want you to showcase something that you're doing, perhaps. Or let's say we're watching a cooking show, and you're supposed to be ending up with this prize dessert, and they hand you these strange ingredients, and it's all about creativity and knowing, okay, if we take these main components and mix them, for instance, the baking powder and all this other stuff, we're going to come up with a basic muffin recipe. So, but now they've handed you all these weird ingredients.
Right.
So that's exactly how, if we can take the perspective of, okay, you know what, I have a choice. I can either sit here in this pile the rest of my life. I can sit in it, you know, as the smoke comes up from the burning pile of rubbish that you're sitting in. And I'm very visual, so I see these things. And this is something else I'm going to say. This is part of the art of being okay. I visualize these silly, maybe silly little pictures in my head that get me where I'm going.
Yeah.
There was a moment in time I visualized myself sitting in my pile of burning rubbish, and that's exactly where I was. But here we have it. We sift through this stuff, and there's still things that are there. It didn't completely burn off. There are still things in my pile. And what I had to do is take my long-term vision. Okay, I can see what it is that I really want.
Yeah.
But in order to get from here to there, it's not like we just go, okay,
well, there we are,
and we
right.
jump over there.
Right.
It's patience, but it's also dreaming big. It's like it's a balance. It's a balance between saying, look, I'm sorry, I'm broken right now. My life has just, I just woke up and realized, oh my goodness, look where I am, and look what's happened to me, look what's happened to my kids, whatever the situation is. But in order to get where I want to go, I have to be willing to say, okay, you know what? I'm not going to be here the rest of my life, and I want to dream big and say no. I envision a happy woman that will be able to be strong enough to do the things I want to do in life. And,
yes.
you know, Rachel, if we look at that in any kind of disease or illness in our life, that is exactly what someone has to do. When we find out, and I use the part about diabetes a lot, because my husband has diabetes. And, you know, when you find out, let's say you find out you have diabetes today. That's devastating. If you've been having symptoms, you may not have even realized that's what the symptoms were. And all of a sudden now you've been given this prognosis, this almost like a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
You have diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, we all, every single one of us, understand how to look at something like that. And we're not just going to say, oh well, we have diabetes. Now I'm just going to, you know, sit here and I'm sentenced to
losing
my toes and my
hands.
This is
what it's going to be.
You know, and we are comfortable.
Such a good point.
We're comfortable with the idea that this is going to take some change. This is going to take some work. It's going to take some maybe involvement with family to help me be the person that I want to be. And
yeah.
The next really important thing to highlight is that sometimes, please, please, anyone who's listening, this is so important. Anytime that we get a prognosis like that, if we could fast forward 2 years down the road, and let's say we've really worked this program, we've changed our eating, we've done everything we can, we don't want to be sick, we want to be healthy. Do you know that after 2 years, we may be able to look at our lives and say, you know what? I have never been healthier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's such a critical thing that you're highlighting here, which is vision. This is the first step that I always take with every one of my clients. And sometimes, you know, it's not unusual to hear, you know, I've never actually really thought about what life might be like if it weren't feeling this way or if this weren't happening. Because, you know, we're so consumed with all the things that are not working, right? Where things are hard, where things are bad, where things are going wrong. We put all of our focus and attention there and almost forget to think about, well, what's the alternative and what do I really want and what does that look like? But you're absolutely right. The more connected we can get, you know, about what is it that we really want to be feeling, what do we want to be doing in our lives, and get really specific about that, we create something. We create energy, right? We create momentum that starts drawing us towards that thing. And what a really powerful perspective that you've offered us, in the sense of, you know, we don't just sit back and go, okay, well, I have cancer and that's just it, done. Right? No, think, okay, what's the solution here? What do I do? And it is. It's an interesting phenomenon that in the world of recovery and healing, you will hear, well, this is just, you know, how it is, or there's nothing I can do about it. And to be able to come out of that place by way of vision and getting connected to that is a great place to start. Yeah.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, it's important what you said as far as the ability to look at our emotional, spiritual, and mental health as important.
Mm-hmm.
Just as important, if not more important, than our physical selves. And it's all part of who we are. And I mentioned, I believe pretty strongly in this last week in the article that I wrote in this subject, that in our culture, we're encouraged to take active part in our own healing, in our physical healing.
Mm-hmm.
Children would be encouraged. You know, we're not going to just let a child sit there and lose his toes and his fingers and from diabetes and not taking care of the insulin and all these things. But so often when we have situations, let's say we've had childhood sexual abuse, and we don't just have these things and then it not affect us. I mean, there are symptoms, normal symptoms,
yes,
that come into a child's life because of what they've undergone.
Yes.
And just as if they had diabetes and we have thirst and we have all of these physical symptoms, and no one would look at a child who is having an insulin issue and they're freaking out and sweating and going through, if you've ever known a child that had the type 1 diabetes, we're not going to look at them and say, snap out of it, get over it. We look at this as a common, normal, physiological symptom. And I'm telling you today, and I know, Rachel, you have stressed this in your teaching as well, that in our spiritual, mental, and emotional health and in our lives, there are normal symptoms of these adverse childhood experiences that we go through, and we are unaware as a culture, as parents, as school teachers, as even social workers, we're unaware sometimes just what to do with this. We shame children. We treat them as if it's just something that they need to get over. It's something that they need to snap out of. It's just, oh, they're just rebellious, or they're, my daughter has an anger issue and she needs to quit acting this way.
Yeah.
Your child
it's
doesn't
almost,
understand.
That's right. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but it just really sparked a thought in me that it's almost as if we treat it because it was an incident. Okay, we'll say, even if it's an ongoing incident, that people start to treat it as, okay, well, it's not happening now. So why? What are you worried about? Like, get over it. And if it's something like diabetes that's ongoing, they have more compassion. But I think you're right. We need to understand that just because the incident, maybe the abuse is no longer occurring, the dis-ease that is there as a result of the abuse and the trauma is ongoing until it gets treated, until there's healing, until there's intervention. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I love your use of the word disease, dis-ease.
Yeah.
You're one of the few I've heard that's actually caught that word. I love that. I'm a word person. So
yeah.
The whole dis-ease, you know, we have this strange feeling like when we say, oh, someone has a disease, we picture this like green, you know, type of foggy look, you know, where somebody's dripping with poison or something. But, you know, these things in our lives, these, if you've ever heard of, I know you have, of ACEs.
Yeah.
ACE stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, and it's just such an interesting concept. In fact, once I learned about this, it did help me. It's not like it changes anything because we can't go back and undo what's happened to us. We just can't.
That's right.
So there is an element of what we've gone through that I'm just going to say it is not able to be completely taken out of our lives. It's part of what we've gone through. And unless we're in a car accident and we completely lost our memory, it's going to be there. But this dis-ease, the disease, the way that it works in our lives, what we do with it, it's true. We can't go back and we can't change what's happened. But at this point, we hold the paintbrush. We are sitting in the pile, and life has said, okay, here it is. You know, here's the strange ingredients, and you've got to come up with these muffins, you know, at the end. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's something that if we really want to, we could take control in a proactive and almost, if somebody can try to catch this, I want to be contagious here. If we can catch this as something positive and say, well, darn it, it really isn't positive, but I'm going to make it positive because right now they don't hold my paintbrush. I do.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I hold it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about some ways that we can become actively involved in our own healing. How do we pick up that paintbrush? What are some of your favorite ways? What would you offer as far as guidance or advice along those lines, Jillian?
Yeah, that's a tough one to say my favorite, but the vision, the perception, that's a key, really big key. The biggest practical move I ever did for myself was to buy a notebook, and I can't stress enough that I know even if you're a computer person, I'm a computer person, I'm constantly on my phone, but buying, the act of buying even a pretty little notebook that can fit into your purse, having a pen connected to it, and physically write it into this notebook, and don't just write platitudes, write how you feel, write poems, even if you're horrible at poems, this is your book. Write letters to God, angry letters, happy letters. Write letters to the people that have hurt you. Do things in that notebook. Make lists of what you want to do for yourself. Make lists of how you can help your physical body get better. Take back your life through lists. Even write down stuff you've already done just so you can cross it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a feeling of doing something. Sometimes that's the first step. You know, a lot of this stuff, it's in our hearts. It's our memories. It's not something we can go out and have a doctor fix it. So when someone says, oh, you just need to forgive, I've had people and myself, sometimes I've wanted to scream. How do you do that? How do you actively, physically do that?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes picking up a notebook, it's not like it changes anything, but it does, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a lot to be said for our giving expression to our thoughts and our feelings. I think one of the a key component of trauma and abuse is the silencing of the person.
Yes.
And making the person feel as if they are the problem, they are
yes.
the error, they are bad. And beginning to get some distance and separation from that is so, so important. And one of the best ways to do that is through writing and beginning to express those things that have gone unexpressed, that have been tamped down, or that have just, you've been told you don't get to say, you don't get to do.
That's right.
Yeah. So important.
And for me, I speak another language, as you mentioned at the beginning, and it's a language that almost no one speaks. I grew up in a third world country, very far from here, and teeny island. And when I first started speaking out about the things that not only happened to me, but that I was still having happen. See, when I found out about my children's abuse, I was still in this abusive religion that condoned beating your children. In fact, not only condoned, but stipulated that we must basically, and I'm going to just say it, and if people can argue if they want, but it's almost like go ahead and beat them in the name of Jesus. And I am very, very much against this. It's very damaging, and more about that on a different day.
But, boy, we could get into that, couldn't we?
Yes, we could. But when I first began to even remotely speak out, Rachel, I had been under the teaching that a woman, a wife, does not speak out against her husband. She doesn't speak out against her church leaders. And if you do so, you are sinning. And I can't even stress enough, just this may not sound like a big deal to someone who hasn't been in that whole, it's like an aura. It's not even something that you can explain. But it is an unspoken weight that you cannot break, because it's God is covering it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for me to even get out the words that I was going through anything filled me with such fear that it was almost like I was going to shake the cosmic world and that somehow I'd be swallowed up in it. Now, this is a strong woman that's talking to you today. This is not who I am. But that's where I was.
Right, right.
That was where I was.
Yeah.
So when I first began writing in that notebook, I didn't even write in English. I wrote in another language that no one could read. And as I did this, I gained momentum. And then I wrote a letter to someone I trusted and explained the whole thing. Then I was so afraid that I'd written it that I destroyed it and wrote it all out in this other language. Then I destroyed that. So we're talking about somebody. So I was a mess. Now, I highlight this because if that's where someone is today, I am living proof. I am living proof that there is power, encouragement, love, happiness, laughter, and strength past that, and that's where I am today, and have been for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's a really wonderful place for us to draw a conclusion to our time together today in that word of hope and encouragement. I hope you all really hear that and hear it again and listen back and replay it. And I know we can go into that place of, yeah, for her, but not for me. But it's really not true. You know, every person has the same opportunity to heal and to move forward in their lives and to reclaim their lives from trauma. And I really appreciate, Jillian, just this perspective that you're bringing today that I so, you know, I'm really behind it. It's really my philosophy as well, is that we do that first and foremost by becoming active in our healing, by taking up, you know, taking up the burden and saying, okay, I didn't cause this, but I'm going to solve this.
and doing what we need to do, whether that be joining support groups, reading books, getting coaching, going to therapy. But please be active. Think about the next step that you can take. Even if it seems scary, make it really small and doable, because there is so much hope and healing available for all of us. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. So, Jillian, I want to thank you so much for just being here today and sharing yourself with us and your journey and your perspective. Remember that you can connect with Jill at alwaysavoice@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, alwaysavoice.com, and also stopthesilence.org, both great places to connect with her. She's also on Facebook. You can look up on Facebook, Always a Voice or Stop the Silence, and connect with her that way. Anything you want to add to that there, Jillian, as far as how people can connect with you or anything else you want to share about Always a Voice or Stop the Silence?
Yes, just anything with Always a Voice on it. That's also my email. And Stop the Silence, you can also get in touch with us with email. And I'm so excited, and I just really excited to hear from any of you that would like to share your story. Feel free to come on. There's a closed group page you can share as well if you're nervous about getting on a public page.
Awesome. Yes, thank you. And we mentioned it a few times here in our conversation. Jillian has been the guest blogger for the Return to Your Genuine Self blog this month. So be sure to go check that out. You can access that most easily from the website under the resources section. So pop over there and check out her four-part series on active healing, the art of active healing. Really lots of great, rich information there, and expands on what we've talked about today. So, Jillian, thank you again for your beauty and your advocacy and your encouragement that you've offered us today, and for being my guest. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rachel. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in and joining us today. Don't forget to visit rachelgrantcoaching.com to learn more about sexual abuse recovery coaching and to explore the other resources that are available. And please be sure to subscribe to this podcast, leave a comment, tell your friends, and come back next time, because we have so much more to share. And until then, take good care of you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.